I'm Ebony K. Williams, attorney and host. Welcome to Holden Court, where we analyze the latest legal headlines that everybody's already talking about. But we dig deep into how the courts impact the culture. We break it all down, going straight from gavel to your newsfeed. And every week, we keep it 100. Right, Dustin?
That's right, E. Let's hold court.
Dustin Ross. I see Bustin's back.
Bustin's back. Back in the house, okay?
Bustin real good.
Okay, that's right.
Listen, we just going to get straight to the docket because we got a good one.
Yes, we
of
do.
Of course. Mr. Sean P. Diddy Puff Combs, he has sued.
Brother Love.
That is his new name,
Brother
right?
Brother Love.
And okay. The baby's name is Love,
yes,
right?
Yes, she is. Cute little baby. Very I seen her saying dada the other day online.
Was that her on the pool?
Uh-huh.
That was so cute. Well, anyways, he's got a lawsuit, shocker. He's got a new one, I should say, where he's he's suing,
Diageo.
Diageo, which is a huge parent liquor company for racial discrimination. It's actually got some interesting merits that he's alleging in this lawsuit, so we're going to break that down.
Okay.
But basically, he's saying they're not doing right by him.
Okay.
And so he got something
Diageo.
To say about
Diageo. So got to go. Okay. Otherwise, it's on the floor.
And if you know,
that's
now
right.
You know.
Okay.
Okay. Just because why not? Former Real Housewives of Atlanta star Kim Zolciak and her former NFL player husband, Croy Bierman, are feuding. More than that, allegations of pretty severe domestic violence, if you just want to say it. Allegation that she punched him, I believe. And they are living under the same roof while under this really, really messy contested divorce. And I just use them as an entry point to this conversation, Dustin. I really just want to have a broader conversation around the pros and cons of going through a divorce while you are both living under the same roof. It's very War of the Roses, if you live a certain age, and we want to talk about the pros. There are some pros, but damn if there are some cons. So we want to get into that. And then lastly, this one's just the story that shows you just how damaging shitty politicians can be on a young person's life. So this is a Nebraska teenager, Dustin. She's been charged with a felony regarding taking an abortion pill, and now this young lady is literally, and her mother, looking at some real serious felony charges. A damn shame in what should have been settled law, right? But not.
So it happens when you don't pack the court the way you're supposed to, but go ahead.
That's it. All right, Puff. Diddy is suing Spirits Giant for racial discrimination. He's claiming that the company, this is very interesting, Puff. He's saying that the company has typecast certain brands as black brands and treated them accordingly, right? So Diddy is claiming that Diageo has sabotaged, that's a big word, his De Leon brand of tequila, saying that he gave it shoddy packaging, and really essentially, this is a quote from the complaint, Dustin, made it look cheap.
Wow.
Made the product look
cheap.
Yes. Yeah, so you're not playing with these people. And then he shows other celebrity brands such as George Clooney and Randy Gerber's Casamigos getting more attention and resources, and they are also, Casamigos is also under the brand portfolio of Diageo. Now, Combs Wines and Spirits has entered into an equal partnership with Diageo back in 2007. So that's really a long time ago, 16 years for the marketing and promotion of Ciroc. That was the original partnership. And obviously, we know that was amazing. Following the very successful partnership there, Diageo then co-purchased the De Leon tequila brand in 2013. Okay, so this is all making sense. Now, according to the data from Nielsen, Diageo acquired Casamigos in 2017, so that's subsequent, just to keep the timeline. They got Ciroc in 2007 with Puff, and then 2013, De Leon, that's a tequila brand also, so let's keep the tequilas together. Then Casamigos, which is Clooney's tequila, in 2017 for $1 billion. That's how much they acquired Casamigos for. It is currently the top-selling U.S. tequila brand, representing a whopping, this is really staggering, Dustin, 12.6% of all tequila sales in the U.S. goes to Casamigos.
They are kicking ass.
Yeah, we know, because we're tequila drinkers, we know, and this is not to disparage Casamigos, it's really just another tequila in many ways.
For sure.
You know, it's a branding thing, it's a packaging thing, it's a marketing thing that makes it now representing 12.6% of the entire tequila market share in the U.S.
Yep.
I mean, that is really, like, wow. Now, according to court documents, 2022, Don Julio was distributed in 36% of retail outlets compared to 34%, because Don Julio is my custom, is my tequila choice, by the way. Mm-hmm. Full disclosure.
I love Don, you know.
Yeah, you know, we some Don Julio people. But, you know, we'll be them even more so when we get that good old brand partnership.
How about that? Okay. Holla, knock on our door, tap on our window pane, please.
That's it. So 36% of all retail stores carry Don Julio. Mm-hmm. 33.4%, so right under that, carry Casamigos. I mean, I could ask you to guess, but I know you read the outline. Percentage that carries Puffy's De Leon, 3.3%. At first, I thought I was looking at the wrong decimal place.
Like, that's got to be.
I was like, they mean 33%. No, baby. 3.3%. And it's facts. You never see it.
Mm-mm.
I never see it. So Diageo's saying this. It says that it had a productive and mutually beneficial relationship with Combs for 15 years, making sufficient investments that have resulted in financial success for all involved. Then they say, we are disappointed that our efforts to resolve this business dispute amicably have been ignored and that Mr. Combs has chosen to damage a productive and valued partnership. Did he damage it, though? Remains to be seen. While right. we respect Mr. Combs as an artist and entrepreneur, his allegations lack merit, and we are confident the facts will show that he has been treated fairly. Last point on this, Combs' lawyers are seeking a court order for equal treatment that they say Diageo contractually promised under the partnership, as well as billions of dollars in damages due to their neglect and breach. So that's a lot. So when you saw the headline, what'd you think?
I thought this makes perfect sense because I've always looked at De Leon as a little engine that could. When it came to tequilas, I actually have worked with them several times before on like partnerships, on different, you know, social media partnerships and things like that. And so I've drank De Leon, you know what I mean? I don't find it. You know how I like to keep my bar stocked at home.
I sure do.
And so I've often tried to, you know.
Y'all, Dustin don't have no regular size bottles, just so y'all know. Dustin, I don't even know where you get these Sam's Club ass size bottles of the most premium tequilas and bourbons available. Dustin must have a direct plug. Go ahead.
So the point is, right?
I'm just letting people know because I hadn't seen anything like it before. And I've been in some rooms and I've been in some people's houses.
Yeah, it makes a statement, right? And
no plus, we shit.
Like, and I'm not even a person who drinks alcohol a lot. I drink socially.
Okay.
And so, like, when we're gathering, when we. I don't drink a lot. I just gather a lot.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? It's the gathering that's a lot, you know?
Sure.
But when I do have it, I like to keep it, you know, to have it on deck to entertain my guests.
It's a robust backstock.
Right. You know.
Yeah, we're not calling Drizzy at Dustin's house.
No.
At all.
So I like to have it. And that being said, I've looked for, especially after I worked with De Leon, I wanted to support the brand. And I've looked for it in different liquor stores. I've looked on it on apps to buy liquor.
Yeah.
I don't see it. So there's something to this.
That part is undisputed.
Yeah.
You know, that's just the numbers. You cannot find it in most retail places. And you can't find it in most bars.
You can't.
You know,
they don't
so
have
that's
De
another
Leon.
Thing with, you know, these people that want to have these liquor brands. It's twofold, right? Number one, you've got to have the retail component, but you've also got to show the numbers that say that restaurateurs and bars
would be,
are going
to
carry you.
To them. Yes.
Correct. And they normally base that decision, I've learned, through the retail numbers.
Yeah.
So one hand feeds the other. So he's definitely got a legal claim around that. Like, why is this particular black-owned or, you know, black-partnered brand not getting the same visibility as my white counterparts. So there's a claim there. Now, in terms of the packaging, now I can't speak on this. Do you feel there is a difference in the packaging as it relates to De Leon and some other peer spirits?
Yeah.
You do see that.
And I noticed it from day one. There are things I do like about the packaging. There's a very interesting design on the top. You screw on.
Okay.
But the bottle itself, there is no proper label. There's a graphic printed on the bottle, and it's not even like it's not even engraved or etched into the glass. It's just something that,
sticking
it's not even a sticker. It's just the graphic itself. So now that he's mentioned it, I can see a difference in the way that it's packaged versus other liquors under this umbrella.
Portfolio.
Yeah.
So listen,
Did he clock that shit and told him like,
Not
on my watch.
Well, this ain't, you know, a lot of companies need to get the memo. You know, we're not doing Chitlin Circuit business anymore.
Ain't nobody just happy to be here.
Yeah, and that's what this is giving. If even half of these allegations are true, Dustin, and I'm the federal, because this is going to go to a federal judge, and I'm the federal judge on this, y'all got to pay something. Now, I don't know if y'all going to pay all the billions Puff is asking for, but y'all are going to pay something, because there is something around equality and equity of marketing and distribution. I mean, we, even as content creators, right, we know that a lot of what the relationship looks like with your distributor, and that's what this is, a distribution deal. That's what Puff is talking about. That's what Jay-Z was talking about with those folks he was fighting with. We're all in various distribution deals. And as you are working with a distributor, a large part of what they need to do to make the partnership worthwhile is the marketing, period.
And all of this is a boys' club, right? We know that the people who are ultimately responsible for these decisions when you get to certain levels of partnership deals like this.
They're mostly old white men. Like, we just have to name that.
That are gatekeeping certain levels of success in that space. They don't want...
Well, now you've said it. Hold on, I got to stop you now because you just said it. You just said the thing out loud.
Gatekeeping.
Which is the gatekeeping and picking and choosing and cherry picking... which brands under your particular umbrella you want to favor.
Right.
So this is one reason why, you know, when you're dealing with, let's talk about agents, and let's take it to our business, right? And you notice that a good agent will not have but so many types of talents, meaning if they've got a bunch of black male, you know, comedic writers, they're only going to have but so many, because at some point you're going to run into a conflict if you are representing, you know, a disproportionate market share of same types of talents. I come from the old school, Dustin. Back in my day when I was first, you know, child acting and modeling and stuff, I was with Jan Thompson Agency in Charlotte. They would not literally have more than two black girls in the same age demographic.
Yep.
Because they had enough integrity to know, Dustin, especially in commercials. You know, well, shit, how many cute black girls are we going to send out for the same fucking gig coming from the same agency, essentially knocking one another out of competition? That's the integrity on that.
Absolutely.
So I'm not mad at Puff for flagging, for, you know, tapping this out, for calling a flag on the play here. Well, he's saying, okay, I think I'm starting to see the writing on the wall here. You all are saying that your flagship tequila is Casamigos. So you are not incentivized to market, promote, even design and create a product that is going to be of healthy competition to your Golden Goose.
Absolutely. Just like Brian McKnight did his kids. The new kids is Casamigos. The old ones are De Leon. That's what's going on here. Okay. And Diddy says you ain't about to Brian McKnight my liquor. Okay. You're not going to do it. You're not doing it. And he's standing up for his brand.
I hate that Brian McKnight did that, by the way. I talked about it on the Gria because, you know, I used to be.
You went in on the Gria.
I used to be a huge Brian McKnight fan. No, I like really. Yeah. Like to the point where I would go like,
travel to see him.
Yeah, but I've never seen his motherfucking black ass no more, because I took that shit personal, as you heard on the Grio. So
tune into the Grio weeknights at 6 p.m. Okay?
That's it. That's right. It. Check your local listings. Thank you.
Yes.
But yeah, so I on this one, you know, I'm not always with Puff, but when you write, you write. Who among us are?
That's but, it. But when you write, you're right. You're that's right. It. You, and you have to stand on that.
Yeah, it's looking like he's onto something, y'all. So you have to be, I think my takeaway from this story, 2D, no matter what industry y'all are in, you know, jurors, be skeptical. Be skeptical when you are looking to your left and looking to your right and seeing whether it's a colleague or this or that that is in similar space. Not that on its face that's the problem, but are you being treated the same?
You need to be looking diligently to assess that, right?
Yes.
I remember when Jay-Z was opening the 40/40 clubs in different cities, and he was vocal about the opposition and the resistance that he got when he tried to open one in Las Vegas. And he was saying how they were literally keeping him off of the Las Vegas Strip. All these different, you know, big, huge, you know,
casinos and all
that. They were they were doing
Wynn and,
the
Steve Wynn and them.
Steve Wynn and them, and I'm never staying at the Wynn again. I would like to look directly to camera. Mm-hmm. After they told me to take my hood down mm-hmm. when I was coming back in from taking a jog, mm-hmm. and I refused because they completely had me fucked up.
Yeah, but it's after be hoods up, next
fear period. Up. And I just had a terrible experience, so won't be there again.
You're
but,
not the first person I've heard say that about a Steve Wynn property.
And so I've seen these policies in action on a very lower level. I can only imagine how difficult it is. So it's the same thing
because
we're
talking about billions of dollars. Let's just name it.
They
now.
Don't want these black.
It's a black billionaire class that is participating, and this is where we have to give flowers where flowers are due. For between Puff, Jay-Z, mm-hmm. Byron Allen, mm-hmm. Tyler Perry, mm-hmm. Oprah Winfrey, Rihanna, you know, Miss Beyonce, you know, this is a black billionaire class for which white corporate America and white America period is not even used to having to engage with.
Mm-hmm.
And now they are being forced to engage with it. You know, this is also why they didn't like Michael.
Oh,
Sony
for sure.
And the whole,
for
you know,
sure.
If you know, you know. But, you know, we're going to keep it on this for a minute, this new wealth class. But, mm-hmm. but let's just say there has been history
of this
around when black, especially artists, like I peeped that. They said something in here. This is the
we respect. I know exactly what you're going to say
as an artist and entrepreneur. First of all, why you put artist first? Because you're not dealing with him in the capacity of him as an artist.
It had nothing to do
with
what
we're... It was a stay in your place, Negro.
Shut up and dribble. That's what that was.
It was shut up and dribble, and it was stay in your place, Negro.
Yep.
This was first... And I think this is what I sense with the Jay-Z issue. Mm-hmm. Y'all really don't like it when who you deem to be... And this is very racial.
Mm-hmm.
This goes back to... And Baldwin writes about this in The Fire Next Time.
Mm-hmm.
How... Ultimately, the only wealth class that white America will accept any progress of mm-hmm. blackness from is in sports and entertainment.
Yeah.
And we know this. It's very much shut up and dribble.
Yep.
And when you have the audacity to transcend that you're here for my entertainment value, whether that's sports or entertainment, and you now want to really stand 10 toes down in your posture of businessman, of businesswoman... That will be met with hostility.
For sure.
And it is being met with hostility. That's why, personally, I don't give a fuck if Rihanna don't ever put out no new music. To me, I see that as a form of black protest.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you done gave us bops for a generation. If you want to stand in the billionaire status of your commerce game,
stand in it,
stand
baby.
Stand in it.
Yep.
And I'm going to be here for it.
Yep. I agree. So I'm glad that Diddy is speaking up.
Me too.
Love. Whoever the fuck, whatever his name is this week.
These days.
Right, Justin Daddy. I'm glad Justin's daddy is standing up. And, you know, I want to see more of these black entrepreneurs, you know, rightfully staking claim to the space
that
belongs to them.
Call it out.
That DeLeon shit should be just as successful, if not more, than Casamigos.
And that's the missed opportunity, right? Because the real, this is the very, shout out to Motown in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
The real genius is when you have your favored child,
mm-hmm.
your favorite product, competing at such a high level, and then you sure up their sibling brands to compete at that same high level. Barry Gordy didn't say we gonna only write the good songs for the Temptations.
No,
he said we're doing it for the Temptations, we're doing it for the Supremes,
mm-hmm.
we're doing it for the Jacksons, we're doing it for even the Four Tops
yep.
and all the other four yep. person boy bands yep. of the era.
Yep.
When everybody's rising to the occasion, that's bigger pie.
That's right.
Stop fighting over slices of pie, make the fucking pie bigger.
That's right.
Shout out to Berry Gordy.
Shout out to Berry Gordy. And his daughter looked just like him. That daughter they got with Diana Ross.
Yeah, she do. I want to say her name is Rhonda.
Rhonda Ross. When you see them kids all together, you be like, that's Berry's baby.
That's Berry's right
that's
there.
That's Berry's baby right there.
Yeah, that's
and she's really successful, too.
Absolutely.
Rhonda Ross. Smart.
She's a doctor, I think. Yeah. Like, no, she's valid. Like, you know, she's got a PhD or something. Yeah, it's all a vibe over there. But yeah, like, that's really what real business-minded people do.
That's right.
You know? You see it with, Byron Allen.
For sure.
Byron is not saying, okay, well, the show is Kevin Ross mm-hmm. and Judge Hatchet mm-hmm. and Maybelline, and we're going to stop there. No, he's a genius. So he says, and we're going to bring on Lauren Lake.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to bring in Ebony K. Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but that's not enough. Mathis, you say what? They playing with you?
Come on over here.
Come on over here.
I love it. I love it. And that's what you're supposed to do.
That's the real boss move.
Shout out to Equal Justice.
With Judge Ebony K. Williams. Coming to a TV screen near you this fall. Mm-hmm. Check your local listings. Okay, moving on. Kim Zolciak and Croy Bierman. You know, we don't do a lot of stories that center whiteness on this show.
I thought you said white mess. But you said white mess. I thought because that's what this is. This is some white mess. For real. And am I entertained? Absolutely. Go ahead.
So Kim and Croy, it's not white mess. Oh, God. I'm going to see if we can get away with naming this episode white mess. Probably not, but I'm going to try it anyway. So Kim and Croy, breaking news, are not going to work out. I think many of us, I at least saw this coming for sure.
When she was first commenting about his rear end on the show back in season four.
Dance competition, yeah. I said, when this cash flow run out, baby.
So is she.
Kim is out the door.
We saw the writing on the wall. I remember in this, and then we'll get to the story because I ain't trying to interrupt your flow. Mm-mm. But I remember in that season four reunion when Andy asked Kim, Kim, I feel like you guys are spending all your money. He said that to her.
He sure did.
He said it to her back then.
Yes.
So there is
that was season four. They're on like 15 now, right? Ooh, baby. So y'all remember he was a long time ago an NFL linebacker, Croy Bierman. I think he played for the Falcons for a minute.
Yeah.
Anyways, he admitted him and Kim are now going through a divorce. It's very public. Now, Croy admitted that he is staying under the same roof as his estranged wife, Kim Zolciak, because he's too financially strapped to live elsewhere. And I believe that.
Honest.
Yeah. Now, let's move on. The couple, I think they have both on different occasions called the police several times during volatile disputes that have happened in front of their children. They got a bunch. What, they got six between the two of them?
Four together, and then she had two daughters previously that he adopted.
Oh, he did adopt those two young, and they're grown women now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but they do still have like four that are school age.
Under 10, four under 10,
we'll put it like that. That's young. The police report also shows how the estranged couple seems to either be struggling to survive, or they are engaged in penny-pinching brawls. So what the cops at least are doing here, which is interesting, is they are...
It's not funny, it's not but penny-pinching brawls is funny.
That's a funny phrase, right. Essentially, law enforcement is saying in the police reports, because this must be what they are getting from Kim and Croy.
For sure.
That the fighting, the violence... And that part's serious, right? Is a result of the cash strap situation. And by the way, that's not uncommon.
Mm-hmm.
Which is another reason I need the owner. Anyways.
They're going to learn. They're going to learn.
I'm going to keep it about them right now. But here we go. Some of us know because we know.
Go ahead.
Because when you've seen like I've seen. Let me get it back over here to the white mess. that these penny-pinching brawls... are around one of them wanting to liquidate certain assets, one of them not. All of this shit, all of it's going to be, of course, handled in divorce court soon. But they are really literally fighting hand over fist around how to divvy up these little bit of assets they got left. It's very sad. Police also responded to their Milton, Georgia home on May 4th after the Real Housewives of Atlanta star called 911. To report that Croy had taken her designer purses and pieces of jewelry. She estimates the worth of those items to be $175,000, along with her passport, and locked them all inside of the basement of the home. Now, this is a separate report. I know I saw that Kim was online, and I think this was verified, that she was selling some of her more popular wigs for like $2,500 a piece.
Mm-hmm.
The responding officer had this to say in the report. This is what the officer said, y'all. I met with Croy, who stated that he believed that the purses and jewelry were marital property. He might have a point there. Put a pin in it. Croy explained that he took several purses because he planned to liquidate them to help offset some of the debt. Radar Online first responded that Kim and Croy filed dueling divorce petitions, so similar to Drew and...
Yeah, when they was racing to the courthouse.
They had to race Drew and what's his name?
Ralph.
Trez Van. No, just explain.
Because it's sensitivity. Okay.
Don't even get me started on that, man. Because, you know, I knew him in L.A. before. Tony.
We'll talk.
We'll talk. Mm-hmm. Wait till these mics go down. Anyway, filed dueling divorce petitions on May 8th, asking the court to award, they both want primary custody of their four minor children, and they both want child support, and they both want spousal support. So this is a situation where, so much to say. I'm going to start with this. Kim called herself, I believe, I don't know Kim, but I believe that she really thought she was marrying up.
Mm-hmm.
I believe she thought she was marrying someone who would be the dominant financial provider. Only to find out, now I don't know why she would think such a thing, because we all know they call it the NFL for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
We all know it's not for long.
Not for long.
And to be fair, Croy had a longer, much longer career than most.
Yep.
But when you are, here's what we also know about money and wealth at our big ages, Dustin. It's not even about how much income you're bringing in, because they both separately made plenty of money. And they certainly made plenty of money together. I was talking about this to Mama Glory because she was so confused. She's like, because I know she made money on Tardy for the Party.
Her spinoff on Bravo that went eight seasons, I believe.
Yes, I was going to say. So even if we lowball that, let's just lowball it and say she only made $650 a season.
Mm-hmm.
8 seasons. And then I know you left Atlanta Housewives making close to $1 million. Mm-hmm. Like, Kim has made no less than $4 million, like minimum, probably more. And that's just reality TV checks. That's not, I think she was on Dancing with the Stars or something, whatever.
Right.
Y'all should see Dustin's face right now.
Because I just, okay, you know, but anyway.
But you know, just we're just doing an accounting.
There have been opportunities for her to be in a better financial position than she's in.
Okay. To say it mildly,
that's
right?
It. Yeah.
I'm just going to say, like, you made at least $4 million by my eyeball test.
Mm-hmm.
Minimum.
Mm-hmm.
Croy, you probably made 25, mm-hmm, at least. You know? So between the two of y'all, we're talking about at least $30 million between the two of you.
Yep.
Probably much more. So my mother's question is, how in the world are they broke now?
Mm-hmm.
But to your point, let's go back season four when Andy Cohen says y'all are it don't matter how much you make. It matters how much you spend.
That's right.
So when you are trying to spend on par with, and a lot of NFL players do this, you are second string, maybe third string. You might whatever. But you're trying to spend like Lamar Jackson.
It's just, it's not balanced. You know what I'm saying? It's not going
to
work.
You're spending like, you know, what's your boy? Jalen Hurts, you know,
right,
you're spending like you're making $200 million on your contract when your contract might be $6 million with, you know, a nine back end if you don't get hurt. So that's the problem. Kim really thought that she, and some women do this. I think Gabrielle Union would say that she did this in her first marriage, where you get married to, he also was an NFL player.
Right, right.
You get married to these men presuming that they are going to be the financial provider and that you will get to play the part of dependent, excuse me. I did say defendant. That was Freudian slip.
Well, I mean,
you're going to become a defendant.
That's about to say.
Fucked around and became a defendant.
Yeah.
First you was a dependent and now you're a defendant.
Yeah, you're going to be wearing Depends once they get through the shit you going through. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is crazy.
No, but this is something that I'm talking to the women right now, Dustin. Y'all need to really look at this. For all of the jokes and laughter, this
right
is a serious issue. Because women that make some money, and some significant money, you marry men that you think are so far ahead of you financially when they're really not that mm-hmm far, if at any. And then you end up fucking around and becoming their financial peer, and then you're mad about it.
Resentment.
That's
you resent
what Kim,
so
that's
much
why, if indeed the allegation is true,
yeah,
and Kim did punch him,
mm-hmm,
that's what that punch was about.
Yes,
it was about, you were supposed to be the breadwinner.
Yeah,
you were supposed to be the rich one. I was supposed to have married the pro athlete that was going to take care of me, and now here we are selling my wigs and Birkins,
and it's
and
no
I'm
one's
and
fault.
I'm mad about it,
and it's nobody's fault but their own.
Oh, it's
because
nobody's
just
fault,
like you said earlier.
Yeah,
this speaks directly into the mediocrity of it all. This speaks
hashtag
directly
whiteness
into yep the laziness of it all.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. The entitlement of it all.
The lack of foresight of it all.
My God. Ebony, I'm telling you right now, if I get rich, I'm going to be rich for the rest of my life.
That part. I have no doubt. It's going to be a when you get rich.
When? I'm going to be rich for the rest of my life. Absolutely. Because you cannot.
Well, particularly these people that make the money with these fleeting skill sets. I mean, and let's talk about that, too.
Because what can Kim do?
Well, that's the problem, is your wealth was based off of a moment in time in history. Mm-hmm. Let's just be very honest about it. You don't mm-hmm. have any actual skill set. You cannot sing, as been proven, mm-hmm. and you cannot act. Mm-hmm. You don't have a skill set. You had what you and NeNe together actually created, which was really magic for a moment.
Thank you.
And what we have seen, and trust me, I know about this better than most, I have firsthand experience, is that cultural moment of women acting badly at their big ages has really overstayed its welcome.
Mm-hmm. People are sick of that.
And the ratings reflect that.
Yep.
Look at Atlanta Housewives ratings. And I think that's a good cast. It's not about the cast.
Almost, but it is.
I mean, you know, it's a relatively good cast.
Yes.
There's been much worse casts with better ratings.
Yep.
That's what we do.
Absolutely,
know.
Ebony.
Let's just say that plainly.
Absolutely.
So it's not just it's the cast. It is the fact that, and nobody wants to admit this, but I don't give a fuck.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is that formulation of, you know, antic-based, spectacle-based mm-hmm. women mm-hmm. at their big 40-plus, 50-plus, 60-plus in some franchise mm-hmm. ages mm-hmm. acting a shitty mess and being messy and gossipy with one another and their husbands and their marriages had its moment.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very big, long moment.
Mm-hmm.
It was over 10 years of a moment.
It was an enjoyable moment.
It was a culture-changing phenomenal moment.
For sure.
That many among us, myself at the top of the line, enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
And impacted.
Continue to.
And we continue to who gonna check me, boo?
Yeah.
I mean, that stuff will live in infamy forever.
Yeah.
But the sad reality for some is that the moment has come and the moment is waning. And for some of you, the moment is absolutely gone. Okay, and I know that's a hard pill to swallow, because you now have to suffer the bitter truth of what we were talking about on the previous week's episode.
Yeah.
You lacked a skill set in the first place.
Yep.
Okay, so I was reading this thing, to your point of getting rich and staying rich forever. I have no doubt that's going to be the case for you, and I know for damn sure it's going to be the case with myself.
Come on.
But in the instance that it would not be, just because anything could happen, mm-hmm, theoretically,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
I heard an interview with Mark Cuban where he talked about what if he lost everything. And he said, and I actually believed him, and I do believe him. He said, well, it would suck like ass, but I'm not overly worried, because the same skill set, he says, I am a salesman. And no, until God takes my ability to sell away from me, just like I made that first billion, I'll make it again. And in that case, it's true. You know, so when you have a skill set, you're not worried in the same way. Now let's go to Croy's dumbass. So you made your wealth, like many in your industry, off of your athleticism. And that's a wonderful thing. And God bless all the people gifted with athletic ability. But what you have to know, much like a model, much like, you know, other traits, that is a depreciable skill set on
for
its face.
Sure. Yep.
But Father Time waits for no man, woman, or they. Okay? So therefore, Croy, you knew at some point your earning ability would deteriorate like all other professional athletes.
Yep.
That's why they're talking about LeBron right now.
Yep.
You know? So your inability to be long-sighted around what additional skill set are you acquiring, and this is where, for all of her problematic many, many, many behaviors, the one thing I really have to respect about Tyra Banks is that this was a woman who understood this face and this body got a shelf life.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, if I want to have the kind of wealth and lifestyle and cultural impact that I really want to have for duration, I have to develop an additional skill set.
Candy Burris.
Oh my God, Candy is
Candy Burris Tucker.
Case in point.
Come on, already, you know, saw success as an artist. Flip that, dribble that ball right into long term success,
and has done it a few times.
Many avenues,
look at Candy. Right? I mean, you saw it with the Candy Coated Nights. Content.
Yeah,
she turned that into a commercial product.
Yes, she did.
And now she is literally one of the most preeminent producers mm-hmm. of Broadway content mm-hmm. of a generation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it goes back to skills, y'all. So because Kim and Croy had, what do you call it, depreciating skills,
mm-hmm.
They find themselves in this white mess.
That's what this is.
This is a white mess. Now, and then I'm going to say this and we're going to move on from these two. Let's talk about the fact that they are cohabitating. Now, Croy is saying, I'm here because I can't afford to be anywhere else. And I believe that to be true. But I was talking to a friend of mine. He's getting a divorce. Or he claims. Anyway. I'll just be telling too much truth out here. But you know how motherfuckers be talking.
Talking that shit.
Yeah, you've been getting a divorce for 2 years.
Okay. Yeah.
Anyways, go give me some Skittles.
Okay.
claim he getting a divorce. But, and so I'm like, well, why don't you move out or why don't you do this? Because he's just, promise you, he's just my friend.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he made a good point, actually, that his lawyer brought up to him. I said, nah, it's been a while since I practiced family law. That's a good point. And I want to put it on the show for jurors to listen to. He, she, or they mm-hmm. who voluntarily leaves the house does do something to their legal right of residence when it comes time for that equitable distribution of the marital property.
Yeah.
Said another way. If you pack your shit up and you leave that house willingly, the judge is more likely to presume that you can be all right without that house because you've shown that you've availed yourself away from the premises. And if there is a property dispute over rights to that particular marital home, the person that's in the house likely prevails.
Yep. That makes perfect sense.
Hence the War of the Roses. Mm-hmm. If you're of a certain age,
you remember that film,
which was,
yeah,
I watch it from time to time just to remember the stakes.
For real.
Okay.
For real.
Because that was the whole point. And they were both, you know, they were rich.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a we can't leave. It's a sometimes that's a choice, Dustin.
Yeah.
Like, nah, you leave. And sometimes that works, but sometimes as we it led to death in War of the Roses. And right now with Kim and Croy, we're seeing alleged punches and abuse. So sometimes that house isn't worth it, mm-hmm. is what I would offer that. Sometimes that house is simply not worth it. And you need to figure out where you can lay your head, whether it's your mama house, your friend's house, your grown ass children's house, you know, until you can figure that thing out. Because the property will come and go. Your health, your well-being, that's a finite thing. So that's all I got to say about them.
That's that. That's definitely all I have to say about them. Good. God bless. Godspeed. I hope they figure it all out. You know what I'm saying? But
do you think everybody's speculating? You think Kim is going to be back on Atlanta Housewives?
I think that's just such a lazy solution to all of this. I don't care. You know what she needs to do? Take her ass to Zeus. Because mm-hmm. Zeus is going to show all this shit. Mm-hmm. Zeus is going to show her and Croy mm-hmm. fighting in that house. Totally. Zeus is going to show what's really going on. Mm-hmm. So
they're going to have that night cam.
They're going to have all of that. While I love the idea, you know what I'm saying, of her returning to the house. Take that shit to Zeus so we can see what's really going on over
and
there in Milton, Georgia.
Get a better cut.
That's it.
She, you know, you'll be an executive producer and do some real content.
Do your thing. That's where that's, to me, that's alignment. You know, she's perfect.
Well, brand-wise.
She's a perfect fit for Zeus. Take that to Zeus. They need the diversity anyway.
Some of y'all understood exactly what he just said. In
that's right.
And some of you didn't.
And shout out to Zeus.
Shout out to Zeus.
Mm-hmm.
All right, y'all. We're going to end it on just, you know, an example of politics gone wrong and politics really fucking up people's lives here. A Nebraska teen has pleaded guilty to charges related to self-managed abortion, essentially an abortion pill. This young lady, Celeste Burgess, 18 years old, just 18, barely an adult, pleaded guilty to felony charge, and I hate that she pleaded guilty, felony charge of concealing or abandoning a dead body. We'll get to that. That's not good. In exchange for the plea, prosecutors dropped two misdemeanor charges of concealing the death of another person and false reporting. Not a good plea, by the way. Madison County prosecutors claim that in April of 2022, Ms. Burgess took an abortion pill that her mother ordered her online. She then gave birth to a stillborn fetus, estimated to be about 29 weeks of gestation. So this is a little more complicated than most of these abortion pill cases mm-hmm. we'll get to, just due to the late term mm-hmm. in which she took the pill. But then this young lady burned and buried the remains. So devastating and brutal. With the help of her mother and another person, she was 17 years old at the time. She has been charged as an adult. She faces up to 2 years in prison, and her sentencing hearing is scheduled for July 20th. Prosecutors agreed not to make a sentencing recommendation as a part of the plea. The state also charged the mother. She's also facing felony charges because the mother provided Miss Celeste with abortion pills. The felony charges are performing, attempting an abortion over 20 weeks, and performing an abortion by a non-licensed doctor. The mom, however, has pleaded not guilty, though. She'll be back in court July 7th. She's looking at 8 years in prison, Dustin.
Wow.
Now, let's keep in mind, how did we get here from a legal standpoint, mm-hmm. right? Statutorily, in Nebraska, abortion has been banned after 20 weeks or 22 weeks after the last menstrual period, though that law applies to licensed abortion providers, it doesn't apply to people managing their own terms, their own pregnancy terms. But since then, they've gotten even more restrictive in the state of Nebraska. The governor there, a Republican, shocker, Jim Pilon, has signed an even more restrictive ban, 12 weeks now. Anything over 12 weeks is considered against the law. Self-managed abortion, those are abortion pill abortions, only explicitly illegal in two states, Nevada being one of them, South Carolina being the other. But prosecutors can and do charge people for other crimes related, like miscarriage or stillbirth. Very, very sad. In this case, someone tipped off the police. Yeah, how did they even find out? Somebody told. They said that Celeste had given birth to a stillborn baby, buried the remains, and then the cops got a warrant based off of Facebook messages. Y'all, watch what you say. Based off of Facebook messages between Celeste and her mother. Facebook, which of course the parent company is Meta, complied with providing the messages, and that's as simple as it is. I just heard a comedian saying that joke the other day, that they felt like social media was all the orchestration of law enforcement, because basically police officers hardly have to do shit no more.
They just go to your socials and get all the evidence they need.
Y'all telling on yourselves left and right.
Yep.
Posting pictures of money you've stolen and
flashing guns,
showing money you've embezzled from the IRS, mm-hmm. not paying your tax. Y'all crazy. Anyway, law enforcement subpoenaed Meta. Meta's complied with the subpoena, as they should, and they saw that the mother and daughter were discussing the pregnancy, the pills, and the whole damn thing. Thoughts?
This is what happens when we have these restrictive laws against abortion that force people. It's going to be a whole lot more of these sad, devastating stories. You know, it's hard to hear this.
Yeah.
And it's hard to hear about something like that happening to an unborn child, or to a stillborn child, rather. Yeah. It's hard to hear about a person being in a position where they have to even figure all this out
at
17 fucking years old.
Yeah, and the mother, I'm sure, I would have to just give her the grace of assumption if she's trying to help her daughter best she can.
Yeah.
And now they're both looking at major time. The mother's looking at 8 years. That's a very serious time. I also want to say this is a pretty shitty plea deal from my legal analysis. You didn't get anything dismissed. You got two misdemeanors. Who gives a fuck about those misdemeanors?
Right.
And they didn't even make a sentencing recommendation. I would have insisted at least a sentencing recommendation. If my client is facing 2 years, you need to recommend 6 months. Other than that, what are you getting? It's called plea bargain. What's the bargain?
You're
here?
Wasting everybody's time.
Yeah, I think she should have pleaded not guilty and took that shit to trial, because this is really sad, and threw herself on the mercy of the jury and gotten a better result, because this is trash.
We about to be literally ran over with stories like this as we move forward. It's not just going to be in Nebraska.
No,
it's going to be everywhere that has laws that look like that.
Absolutely.
And get ready for it. And I hate that we're going to be subjected to this emotional distress reading these headlines and thinking about that. You know what I'm saying?
And these awful conditions. I mean, this young lady could have died.
Yeah.
Like, we're not even talking about that part, right?
That part.
Like, yeah, it's awful that there was a stillborn baby. No doubt. It's awful that
What about her life?
Right. Because this young lady could have died. We don't even know, nor is it our business, mm-hmm. to know the reasons and circumstances that led her to seek an abortion at past, almost 29 weeks. You know, we don't know. Was it incest? Was it rape? Was she? Who knows?
Who knows why?
And it doesn't have to be that, but we don't know, is the point. So all these judges and jurors that want to say so fucking much when you don't even know what you're talking about. You know, it could have been, she could be pregnant for her own daddy. You know, like,
you
we
don't
just know.
Don't know. You don't know what her her story or her plight particularly
like, there's
is.
A lot of, you know, I understand there's a lot of reaction, especially around late term abortions, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, a lot of people are very tolerant of abortions, you know, 6 weeks, 8 weeks. Okay, but what, 3 months, you should make your mind up. Okay, I hear all that, but you don't know.
You don't know.
You don't know.
Things happen during the gestation of a pregnancy, and, totally. And you can have several reasons, most health related, that you have to terminate a pregnancy.
And when we say health related, it could be emotional health related. She could be a whole schizophrenic. And, like, you just don't know, is my point, right? You don't, none of us know. You don't know, Dustin doesn't know, I don't know. So therefore, the fact that this is a circumstance in which a really a legal child at 17 was having to even navigate at the mercy of her mother, who is now legally looking at 8 years of felony charges, you know, it's really dreadful that we're back here. And I have to say back here because we weren't here just a year ago. Only with the overturning of Roe v. Wade have we found ourselves in these legal predicaments. And as you know, Dustin, I'm going through my single motherhood journey, and it's been very interesting having conversations with high-profile physicians of all aspects of the political spectrum that are just like, you know, not for nothing, this has really fucked up my practice. Because we don't talk about how does, you know, what does that mean around the embryos that are created in IVF now? What does that mean around transfers that don't work? And then typically, you know, is that a DNC? Is it that it's just really shitty
and unnecessary
and all unnecessary? All this failed effort. And it's always going to be a failed effort when we try to legislate morality in this
morality,
country.
Legislating morality.
We try to legislate sex. We try to legislate sexual orientation. You know, it's never going to ever. It never works. It literally only kills people. That's all it does. There will be dead mothers. Now we're going back to the days of coat hanger abortions. People are going to continue to order abortion pills online because desperate people do desperate things.
That's it. That's it.
Period. You know. So the last thing I'll say about this is, as awful as this was, and I have to think that this young lady did this because she was, you know, in a very, very unfortunate dire circumstance.
Dire straits.
But if you can, and you out there know someone that is, especially if you in Nebraska or South Carolina, one of these extra fucked up ass abortion states, try to avail yourself to one of the funds out there. Contact Planned Parenthood, contact the Planned Parenthood of your state. Many, many, many of these funds have designated dollars, Dustin, that will give you money to go to a state where you can obtain a safe and legal abortion no matter your gestation window.
Yeah.
That is the only thing I can offer by way of, you know, reaction that could be helpful in this situation. But other than that, it's like you said, it's not going to stop in Nebraska. It's not going to stop in South Carolina. This is going to take over the entire nation. But for only two things that could do this. Number one, the first one is going to be a multi-generational, really long journey back to justice, which, of course, is the generational resetting of the Supreme Court. The other, though, not so long term, and that is federal regulation, federal statute that protects abortion in all 50 states. And that can be done, but what is required is the political courage of this administration. So this is Joe Biden, I'm talking to UVP Kamala Harris, and I'm talking to the good brother from Brooklyn, Hakeem Jeffries.
Hakeem Jeffries.
That's it. Say, fuck that filibuster. And pass the bill. Pass it into law. Do what the Supreme Court has undone, because you can't do it. But it requires the destruction of that filibuster, which is some bullshit anyway. And actually, y'all could do a whole lot if y'all got rid of that filibuster. But protecting safe, healthy abortions, which is health care for women in America, is one of those things.
Yeah, that's it. Political courage. You had any? Courage. If I can get some courage, that's what you need. Yeah.
Let's see if I got some courage.
Mm-hmm.
All right, y'all. That's going to do it for this week. holding court. We'll be back in session next week, of course. In the meantime, we want y'all to stay safe. Please stay hydrated. Black people, put on your sunscreen. It's hot outside. We die of skin cancer first because we get diagnosed the latest.
Get you some SPF in your life.
Listen, I like 30 or 50.
I mean, I get the kid shit.
That stays on the longest too.
I don't care, mate, and I want it to dry white.
You want it to, so people can see it's on.
Yeah, that's right. I'm protected.
Something's wrong with Dustin. Okay. Y'all. What you want the people to do?
Read their terms and conditions.
Always.
Yes.
Holding Court is an Interval Presents original production from Uppity Productions in association with Dawson Media. Executive producer and host, Ebony K. Williams. Co-host and producer, Dustin Ross. From Interval Presents, executive producers, Alan Coy and Jake Kleinberg. Produced, of course, by Ashley J. Hobbs. Editing, sound design, and mix by Stephanie Morell. Original music by Epidemic Sound. Video editing by Kason Alexander and Courtney Deans. Consultant, Carla Wilmaris. Special thanks to operations lead, Sarah Yu. Business development lead, Sheffy Ellen Swag, and marketing lead, Samira Still.